Support for Utah Public Radio comes from the Cache Valley Center for the Arts, presenting the Irish step dancing and music of Celtic Knights, tonight and tomorrow at 7:30 at the Ellen Eccles Theater. Ticket information is at centerforthearts.us.
Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Tar sand development in eastern Utah, the subject of today's program. A Canadian company called U.S. Oil Sands, they were formerly Earth Energy Resources, has received state mining permits from the Utah Division of Oil and Gas and Mining, also Utah Division of Water Quality, to extract oil from tar sands on public land in the Book Cliffs area of eastern Utah. This is near the Uinta and Grand County line. And this would be one of the first commercial tar sands mines in the United States. There are opponents to this project. Moab-based group Living Rivers opposed the project. They've appealed the water permit, citing a possible pollution risk to the Colorado River and other objections. And later in the program, we're going to talk with John Wyside of Living Rivers, Rob Dubuque with Western Resource Advocates. We'll also talk with University of Utah Professor William Johnson, who has no specific objections to the project, takes no position on it, but says further testing is needed. We talk now with a proponent of the project, Uinta County Commissioner Mike McKee. Commissioner, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. It's good to be with you this morning.
Thanks for being back on Access Utah. We've interviewed you a couple times when we've come out to Vernal, the Uinta Basin, so we appreciate you coming back on with us. Is that right to characterize you as a proponent of this project?
Absolutely.
And what are the benefits that would come from this?
Well, I think there's a lot of benefits in the project. First of all, our country needs a domestic supply of oil and gas, and when we look at the amount of oil that's being consumed in the country, there's about 20 million barrels a day being consumed in the country. About half of that is produced domestically, and so we've got a huge balance of trade. We've got an economy that's in trouble. 40 to 42 cents of every dollar being spent by the federal government is borrowed money, and then when we have such a huge trade deficit, it's very evident what happens to our economy. We've got a real problem with jobs in this country, where we do not have the employment, the jobs that be valuable. And so to be able to do some major things to help in this regard is, I think, valuable not only locally to the state and to the nation.
Have there been studies, or can you quantify in any way the impact on the economy in the Uinta County, eastern Utah area, should this project go forward?
Well, let me just back up a little bit. In the Uinta Basin and in Uinta County, we know that 50% of the jobs that we currently have and 60% of our economy is currently tied to the extractive industry. And so, this is something that falls right in line to a lot of what we do here, a lot of our workforce. And again, let me just give a couple numbers here. And it's in more of the conventional oil and gas drilling. But in 2008, for example, there were about $229 million of mineral lease, which revenues generated right out of Uinta County, with half of that going to the federal government and the other half coming to the state and distribute out. But that's a 12.5% tax that is imposed on oil and gas companies. And so, that's just in the taxes, and that doesn't include the severance tax that the state also imposes. And so just out of this county, just the revenue sources and the taxes that come from this. And certainly, once this project is up and going, the revenues that would come, I believe that I was looking at I'm trying to remember the chart on it, but I believe the belief was that there'd be something like $100 million in tax and revenues out of this project that could be coming into the state. So, I mean, it's a significant, this is when they get to full scale, but it's a significant amount of revenue available.
And I'm reading that there are four refineries in Utah that process petroleum from tar sands that comes from Canada, 5 million barrels a year. And this project alone, the new project, if it's fully approved, would account for about 13% increase or some 2,000 barrels a day. That's not huge, but is it fair to say that your hope would be, if this project is successful, there would be perhaps more tar sands development in eastern Utah?
Well, and it's my understanding, some information that I've seen is I believe it's their hope and goal to be up to about 50,000 barrels a day, and in 10 years, and so. The opportunity for the economy, again, to the state, it's fairly significant.
Let me run a couple of objections from the environmentalists past you.
Sure.
One is water, that this type of development would need more water, and that would deplete the aquifer.
Well, I get a little passionate about this, and, Western resource advocacy and some of the other groups, many times, I believe, and maybe inadvertently, I'm not trying to say anything different, but a lot of times just plain do not use current or good information. And let me just give for an example. The process that they're going to be using here is 95% recovery on the water. The solvent that used is recyclable, biodegradable. And yet many of these groups really like to, and whether it's with oil sands or with oil shale, either one, continue to purport a lot of misinformation. They give information on oil shale that it's going to take all this water. When we get to oil shale, there's processes that's out there that require absolutely no water. And so, it does bother me when they continue to promote misinformation. And rather than to look at, what's really there, I personally went to Estonia. Now, this is on oil shale rather than oil sands for a moment. But I was personally in Estonia this summer, saw the process on oil shale they use up there. It's their intent to come here in Utah and use the same process. And yet, they continue to give out this misinformation that, anywhere from 3 to 7 gallons of water for every gallon of oil, and just a lot of misinformation, because there are certain groups that do not want to see oil sands or oil shale move forward. And I think there's a reason for that, because there is such a tremendous reserve that is out there. I mean, it is staggering. In the Uinta Basin, with oil shale, around 300 billion barrels of oil and oil shale just here in the Uinta Basin. That's more than in many of the, that would exceed Saudi Arabia.
Hmm. And of course, that is mouthwatering to people who look at economic development and look at the extractive industry as a potential solution to our energy problems. But by the same token, if you talk about that kind of scale, that's even more concerning to environmentalists. So I wonder if you've had conversations.
Let me address that just for a minute as well, too. The commissioners, the counties, our local citizens, we want to see development happen in a responsible manner. And we believe we can have the best of both worlds. I just mentioned the water issues. We don't see the water issue as really being an issue. When you look at the U.S. oil sands, if somebody wants to get on the internet and do some research, you'll find, the water best in class, the greenhouse gases best in class, reclamation best. This group is a very responsible group in what they're endeavoring to do, and there are groups out there, as I've indicated, that really want to distort information. They are fearful of. There's groups out there that do not want to see anything but windmills, and I think to solve our energy future, it's going to take all of it. And I think it's important that we look at this responsibly. Certainly, the reclamation. I can go down the White River area a few years ago where they were working on oil shale, and a lot of that area down there, the sagebrush along the side, the roads and everything are healthier where it was disturbed than when it was not disturbed. And so, I guess the bottom line is when with healthy reclamation, they can go in, quickly do what they do, reclaim the land and let the land be healthy and you know, I think we can have the best of both worlds.
By the way, are you familiar with this area? Have you been out there?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I have. I've been out there. In fact, down in the PR Springs area, which is very southern Uinta County, you know, there's some places where these oil sands, where I've seen where it actually kind of oozes out of the ground on a good hot day. Mm. Oil sands is, you know, when it's cold is more solid, but on a really good hot day, you don't want to step on it. It's kind of a tar-like substance. And I'm not saying you can get that all everywhere you walk, but in a few places where it, you know, where it's protruding from the ground. And there's a tremendous amount of oil sands down in that area, and some of the best in eastern Utah. The best oil sands in the United States is found right here in eastern Utah, and the most.
I understand this has been called or been used sort of as a poor man's asphalt. That's one use for this previously, but now economics would allow you to extract petroleum from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, for the asphalt or the pavement, actually, we have here in Uinta County, and in cooperation with UDOT, there's been a study that we've put together, and what's happening is, with the proper aggregates, we believe this to be a superior product to the hot mix that's being used on our state highways. And what happens on the hot mix when they utilize this product, you know, in time it's brittle and you got to repave over. But by using this natural oil sands, it essentially heals itself. On a good hot day, it kind of blends. You get the right aggregate in there. What we need to do is we actually have to mix quite a bit of crushed rock and the right aggregate in there, because it is fairly rich. But it does make a very, very good pavement surface for our roads. We've been using it naturally out here in Uinta County for a long time, but getting the right aggregate and the right base on there, it's a very good product. So by being able to utilize this in other ways, just expands the use of this product.
I want to talk about the economics of this. My understanding is that for tar sands and for oil shale, some of these extractive methods, you have to have the right price for crude oil. Otherwise, it doesn't make economic sense. And, of course, we all know that oil prices have been rising. They always fluctuate, though. Do you think that this will remain economically viable?
Well, I do. While I can't tell you, you know, the exact price that they have to have on the oil sands, with oil shale, I'm told between $50 to $75 a barrel, depending on certain conditions. It's always been my understanding that the oil sands, the price on that that's needed is a little less than it is on the oil shale. And so anytime you're approaching, you know, $100 a barrel, you know, there's some good economics.
No, with all of this together, tar sands, oil shale, some of these other alternative methods, do you see slight increases there, an explosion? What do you see in the next few years with that sort of extraction?
Well, I mentioned that I was in Estonia, and I'll talk about oil shale here for just a minute first. When we're in Estonia, it's their intent and hope to be able to, in beginning in somewhere around 2016, if they can get the permitting for the oil shale of starting here in Uinta County. And as they get going, it's their belief that there'll be 2,000 new jobs, and that's just with the Estonian company. And so I think there is potential for, and these are good high-paying jobs. I was looking at a slide. U.S. Oil Sands made a presentation at our energy conference, and total cost per employee that they were showing was about $120,000 per employee. So, I mean, time you get the benefits and, you know, everything that goes there, you know, these are going to be, you know, for the most part, really good-paying jobs. And so I do see that there'll be growth in the state, because you also have your supportive jobs and everything that goes with that. Many times you have a 4-to-5 multiplier effect.
Now, some would say, why don't we look to the future and maybe embrace the future earlier? And, you know, the petroleum and other products like it are going to run out at some point. Why don't we just embrace the wind power and the solar power and the geothermal earlier and try to diversify the economy?
Well, I guess my response to that would be, Forbes magazine and others have said that Utah is the best place in the nation to do business. And I think for a variety of reasons, you know, we've got good technology, but one of those reasons, and is noted, is the fact that we have, you know, fairly cheap energy here in Utah. And that is an important item as we draw in business and we recruit business. And as far as the, you know, how much reserve do we have right here in Utah? And I'm going to go to oil shale again here for a minute. According to the RAND report, if you were to supply the entire nation's energy needs with oil shale out of the Green River Formation, it would last the nation for 100 years. There's other reports that will show natural gas would last between 1 to 200 years with the amount of natural gas that's been discovered. And they found, you know, these other gases that they found up in North Dakota and in Pennsylvania. So there's a lot of domestic energy available. And, you know, it's not that we're, you know, I think, again, let's have all of it. I think let's responsibly develop all of it. But I will tell you, you know, for example, with wind power, and I'm not making a knock on wind power, but for wind power to work currently, it has to be subsidized heavily, not only here in this nation, but in other nations. You know, as I met with the Estonians, it's one of the things they said, you know, it's great to have wind power, but just recognize it's going to have to be subsidized fairly heavily to make it, you know, work out for the consumers. And so, you know, when states say, well, we want a certain amount of our power coming from green, that's fine, but just recognize that the power bills and your business costs and all products, the cost of that product is going to be higher.
It does seem like opposition to this particular project is, at least by media reports, coming more from Grand County, not from Buena County. Is that your view?
Absolutely. You know, in Buena County, we have sent letters of support for the project, and you know that's where their facilities are located is in Buena County, and you know we support, you know, again, we want to ensure that everything's done in an environmentally sound manner, and you know we're not concerned about that issue. We feel comfortable with where they're going and what they're doing. Grand County, you know, I think the politics are different in Grand County, with full respect to Grand County. But, you know, it is a little, the politics there are somewhat different than they are here.
So just to bring this to a conclusion here, and by the way, if you've just joined us, we're talking about tar sand development, potential tar sand development in eastern Utah, in southern Uinta County. And a Canadian company has received a state mining permit, and they plan to extract oil from tar sands on public land in the Book Cliffs area of eastern Utah. We're talking with Uinta County Commissioner Mike McKee, who supports the project. So you are satisfied that this will be a safe project from the terms of water availability, water quality, and other environmental concerns?
Yes.
And there have been some concerns raised about the financial viability of this company. You're satisfied that they're going to be able to go forward?
You know, I don't have all the inside information on, you know, what, but I, you know, it's my understanding they received a fairly large infusion of capital to be able to move forward, and that's what they're doing. I'm not aware of anything different than that.
Well, we'll certainly see what happens, and I'm sure you'll be watching this with interest as it goes forward. I think the next step is in May. The appeal of the water permit is going forward. Mike McKee, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you again.
And coming up, following a break, we're going to hear from a University of Utah professor whose findings are going to be used in that May hearing. He based his information off of Western Resource Advocates, who is supporting that appeal or taking that appeal before the administrative law judge. That's issued by, or rather, was brought by Living Rivers. And we'll have representatives from both of those organizations, John Weisheit and Rob Dubuque, in the third segment. But coming up following a break, I'm going to be talking with University of Utah Professor William Johnson. He takes no position on the project overall, but says more testing is needed. That's coming up following a break.
This is Contemporary Western Women. I'm Elaine Thatcher. Claudia and Don Prophet ranch near Evanston, Wyoming. They have had a lifelong partnership of working cattle and raising their family in the ranching life. The Prophets leased pasture to supplement their own land. For a number of years, they pastured cattle on Antelope Island in the middle of the Great Salt Lake. But in 1983-84, there were floods in the area, and the causeway that provided driving access to the island was underwater. They had to fly hay to the cattle that year.
They started starving to death, and we started flying hay. In old World War II bombers, and it was so foggy that we had to do it with instrument panel. You know, we couldn't see where we were out there.
It was a C-97. We flew hay for 20 days, I think,
in
total, and then one of the engines burned up and stopped doing
Why
that.
We didn't kill somebody in that operation, I'll never know. It caught on fire a time or two.
It took us years to overcome the financial burden. The plane itself cost $2,500 an hour to fly.
Oh my.
And hay was about $120 a ton that year, and we'd fly 20 ton at a time,
yeah, about that.
Every other day. And he'd figure by instrument when he was over the lake or the island itself, and he would holler to us to kick hay out. And then as he passed the island, and climbed for another turn, the men would all throw up, and then he'd tell us again when to kick hay, you know, when to stop and when to start. Those were our younger years. We were adventurous and just dived into whatever needed to be done. We'd probably shake our heads and not do it nowadays, but the choice was just let the cattle starve to death or make these efforts. And so we left a lot of monuments to our education out there, those 260 some dead cows, lots of baby calves that were either aborted or died from weak calf syndrome, or their mothers weren't able to nourish them. And so it was a real education. But you know, there's no place like ranching to raise children. They've learned lessons that weren't easy lessons, but they've learned things that will be of value to them for their whole lives, just with their work ethic and their view, their appreciation of basics and the outdoors and so forth. And we've spent time even with our kids in places where we didn't have running water or electricity, and so they're not really bound by that. It isn't for everybody, I'm sure, but we just would not choose anything else.
Contemporary Western Women is a project of Utah State University's Center for Women and Gender and Utah Public Radio. We focus on women in the Rocky Mountain region and their stories of strength, hope, and humor in all aspects of life. If you have a story to share or know someone who does, please visit the Contemporary Western Women link at upr.org or call 1-800-826-1495. I'm Elaine Thatcher.
Support for Utah Public Radio comes from Cafe Ibis, a coffee roasting company with a focus on sustainability for people and planet through certified organic, fair trade, and Smithsonian bird-friendly, shade-grown coffees. Ordering and location information is at cafeibis.com.
Thanks for joining us for Access Utah. We are talking about tar sand development in eastern Utah. This would be, if it is fully permitted and goes online, one of the first commercial tar sands mines in the United States. This is big in Canada, of course. In fact, a Canadian company is the one that's moving this. They've received mining permits and would, if this goes forward, extract oil from tar sands on public land in the Bookcliffs area of eastern Utah and far southern Uinta County. We've talked with a proponent of the project, Uinta County Commissioner Mike McKee, who says we need energy. This would provide energy potentially out a couple of hundred years, would provide jobs for that area, boost for the economy, and it is safe, according to Commissioner McKee. We're going to be talking in the last segment of the program with opponents of the project, John Weisheit of Living Rivers and Rob Dubuque of Western Resource Advocates. Up now, conversation with University of Utah Professor William Johnson. He was hired by Western Resource Advocates in their appeal of the water permit before an administrative law judge. That'll be happening in May. He takes no position on the project, but says essentially that more testing will be needed. And the essential question is whether or not the tailings left behind from this extraction project are safe. And I ask him, is that the essential issue?
Yeah, that's the issue. And I guess let me preface that, you know, I was provided material by Western Resources Advocates. And so my testimony was based on that material. I didn't do, you know, further research to find out if there was other material, you know, available. But my sense is that I had everything that was available with respect to the permit request.
Do you have any reason to believe that there is other material out there?
No, I don't have any reason to believe that. But I just want to make sure that it's understood that I was doing work for Western Resources Advocates and giving them a sense of whether or not the tests that had been performed and provided to the Division of Water Quality were sufficient to substantiate the company's claims that there was no impact of the process.
And the Utah Division of Water Quality has issued a state mining permit, and that's what's being appealed, as I understand it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, in fact, basically, I'm not, I haven't been keeping track of the details of which permit, where they are in the permitting process.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't speak to, you know, specific steps in that process.
I'd like to get basic, if I could. Of course, we're all vaguely aware of tar sands, the potential to extract petroleum. And, of course, that ties into the whole debate over energy, where we should get it. I don't know if I've never seen tar sands. What does tar sand look like?
Well, it's, you know, and I'm not, believe me, I made these calculations from theory, from you know, data I was provided. So I have not been on this site, but I can tell you that, you know, I've seen rock from, you know, oil shale rock and some tar sand rock, and basically it's, you know, material with black coloring and it's material with a black organic component is immobile. It looks like it's part of the rock.
And of course, what a company like U.S. Oil Sands has to do is extract that valuable petroleum from that rock.
That's right.
And that's where the controversy comes in. They say, the company says, that according to their proprietary process, by the way, they're not giving this out because it's proprietary. They're afraid competitors would come in and use this.
Right.
That the process of extracting this and the tailings that are left behind, that those are safe.
Right. And in fact, the materials by themselves, you know, I would consider safe. Now, I haven't researched the reagent that they use in any degree. I just, you know, did some very quick cursory searches, and what I saw didn't really raise any big red flags in my mind in terms of, you know, the safety of that reagent itself. It's apparently an orange peel extract. The specific product from what I've been told is called D-limonene, and it's a molecule it's an organic molecule that has a high compatibility with the tar compounds, and so it solubilizes the tar compounds out of the rock and into the D-limonene and makes them recoverable. Mm-hmm. And so that's the essence of the process. And so it's not so much a matter of a concern about D-limonene by itself, it's a matter of concern about the combination of D-limonene with these tar compounds.
Yeah, I was just going to say the each of these by in and of themselves, as far as we know, is safe. They describe this D-limonene as a citrus-based chemical, right?
Right.
And I guess the tar sand, that's okay by itself, but you're saying together it may cause a problem.
Yeah, it potentially could cause a problem. Now, I want to make very clear that, you know, I don't have actually an opinion on whether or not this project should go forward, at least on the basis of the calculations I made, because a lot more needs to be understood about the depth of the groundwater at the site, the potential for, if this residual material were to leach into the groundwater, what are the potential receptors, you know, be they human or other, you know, members of the ecosystem. And so, you know, I don't have an opinion on that because that work hasn't, no research has been done, and no consideration has really been made for the potential for contact with this material. What I am concerned about is that there are a series of simple tests that really should have been done to at least generally demonstrate the potential for this stuff to move into the groundwater, into surface water. Hmm. And they weren't done. And so my concern is that those tests could be done. They're extremely inexpensive. There's no reason they shouldn't be done, and yet they weren't.
And, in fact, your quote is saying the Division of Water Quality did not do its job. You're saying they should do these tests.
Well, they certainly should ask for these tests. Now, the Division of Water Quality shouldn't do these tests. They should ask the company to provide them.
Could these tests be done in a very kind of a, I guess, a fast process?
The company could take residual material. So let me outline what these tests are. Okay, the company makes the claim that the delimonene, the reagent they use for solubilizing the tar, simply evaporates and is not a problem. And delimonene by itself does indeed vaporize reasonably fast, and by itself would not be a problem. But once you have it co-mixed with tar compounds, and now you have changed the characteristics of that fluid to include both the delimonene and the tar compounds, its vaporization properties are going to change. If nothing else, because the tar compounds, as you start to vaporize delimonene, will form a rind on that fluid and limit the vaporization. Pardon me. So that needs to be demonstrated. That's a simple test. They can take the residual, the produced rock with that residual fluid and show the rate at which the material vaporizes from the rock.
By the way, the company says this is a new process, and it's a proprietary, they say, the delimonene. Do you know of any other processes similar to this? I know there are large operations in Canada that are extracting petroleum from tar sands.
Sure, and I'm not an expert on the different processes that are being used. I'm an expert on transport and the environment and contaminant partitioning. So I can't claim to know all the different processes, but I do happen to know that, you know, there's another company in eastern Utah proposing to use a thermal treatment to remove the tar from, it's an oil from the sands. And so there's a number of different ways that you can coax this tar out, the petroleum out of these tar or oil sands, and extracting with this organic citrus extract is one way. Heat is another. And the problem with the citrus extract, or a potential problem, is that that combination of that extract with the tar can be potentially a mobile fluid and certainly has a higher propensity, thousands of times higher propensity, to dissolve into groundwater or water in general, relative to just the tar compounds themselves.
You may not have studied this. You said you just referenced this, but out of curiosity, if you happen to know, a thermal method of extracting petroleum from tar sands, you think that'd be potentially safer than this?
It could potentially be safer if it's done correctly, because you're not adding something that's going to create this higher potential to move into groundwater. Okay, and so on that basis, you could say it's potentially safer. But you know, the devil's in the details. There's other aspects of the process that may make it, you know, something of concern. But again, I'm not saying that this citrus extract process is unsafe. I'm saying that it hasn't been properly substantiated to be safe.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see. This will obviously be going forward. The appeal from Western Resource Advocates, that'll be happening in May.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that goes. We'll be talking more about this issue in this half hour, and we'll be talking in this part of the program with University of Utah geophysicist Professor William Johnson. Thanks so much.
Okay. Appreciate your time.
You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and we're spending the hour talking about energy development, specifically extraction of petroleum from tar sands in eastern Utah, southern Uinta County. In the PR Springs area, this would be on 62 acres of public land. It would be a surface mine, some 2,000 barrels a day initially, heading up to more than that. And this would initially be about 13% of tar sand processing, apparently according to current figures, that's currently going on in Utah. That tar sand petroleum is coming from Canada, where this is a big project. The hope of Uinta County Commissioner Mike McKee and others who are proponents of this project is that this would get up and running, would provide oil, provide jobs, would provide a boost to the economy, and that it would be opening the door for more petroleum development in eastern Utah, which is a big part of that economy. There are, of course, opponents to this. Our guest in this last segment took no position on this particular project, but said that more testing definitely needs to be done on this specific process. We'll talk with opponents of the project in general, John Weisheit of Living Rivers, and Rob Dubuque with Western Resource Advocates, following a brief break.
This is Jennifer Pemberton, website manager at Utah Public Radio, inviting you to visit the new upr.org. Our new website features dynamic news stories from all over the state, daily posts for Access Utah, interactive program schedules, and easy online listening. Go now to upr.org, your favorite public radio website for Utah news and UPR programs.
Support for Access Utah comes from Crump Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now with new hours, open Monday through Saturday 7 until 3 and Saturday 8 until 3. Offering a changing menu of French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits and serving lunch sandwiches.
Thanks for staying with us for Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking about tar sand development in eastern Utah. And a Canadian company, which used to be Earth Energy Resources, they've now changed their name to U.S. Oil Sands, has applied for mining permits to extract petroleum from tar sands in eastern Utah, extreme southern Uinta County, near the Uinta-Grand County line. And they're hoping to get that up and running within the next year or two. They have received permits from the Division of Oil, Gas, and Mining and from Division of Water Quality. That last permit is the one that's being appealed now, and that will be heard before an administrative law judge in May. And the appeal is from Living Rivers. Western Resource Advocates is handling that appeal, and we have representatives from those two organizations with us in this part of the program. They're opponents of this project. John Weisheit joins us from Living Rivers. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Tom. Glad to be here.
And Rob Dubuque is with Western Resource Advocates. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, good morning. You're welcome.
So let me start with you, John Weisheit. I know that you oppose this project. What are your main concerns?
Well, there's many, mostly because I have an affinity for the landscape. I've been a river guide for over 30 years and have been traveling through the Tavaputs Plateau through that whole time. It's a beautiful area. It's a historic area. It's an ancient trail route that the fur trappers used. In fact, there's an old inscription at Westwater Creek, which is a perennial stream. It runs all year long. And so it's a beautiful landscape. It has pinyon pines and ponderosas and Douglas firs, and it's it would be mauled and destroyed, and that is the main concern that my community has here in Moab, Utah. But of course, we're also very concerned about the water quality that could be endangered.
So you think, apart from the water issues, that the land would be irreparably harmed?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I heard some talk from Mike about how it would be reclaimed. I seriously doubt that that would happen. When I visited the site a couple of months ago, I looked at the amount of topsoil that is there. It's in a little pile right now, and there really isn't enough to reclaim it properly. And I'm afraid it'll just blow away and erode away, and it'll eventually end up like a moonscape.
We turn to Rob Dubuque. This appeal of the water permit, centers, as I understand, at least part of it centers on this process. The company's going to use a citrus product to as a solvent to it to extract the petroleum. They say it's safe. Your expert, William Johnson, University of Utah, takes no position on the project, but he says we definitely need to test this. It may not be safe.
Well, that's true. This process is experimental at this point. As you know, there's not a sufficient amount of water to use the same process they use up in Canada, and so the company is proposing to use a chemical extraction. And they're going to put the untreated waste stream directly into the ground. And our expert, Dr. Johnson, has expressed an opinion on that that says that because of the type of process it is, that it'll mobilize these petrochemicals thousands of times more than they are naturally, and that they will leak into the groundwater and cause a problem environmentally.
Just parenthetically, I'm curious about the process. This appeal will go forward in, or at least be heard in May.
Yes.
If eventually that is the appeal is overturned, is that the last step? What's next in the permitting process?
Well, next, what we're asking for at this point is for a full-blown review from the Division of Water Quality. And so the next step, if we prevail, would be to require the company to do some additional testing, to do some monitoring, and to submit a full groundwater application permit to the division. And then the division would have to analyze that information and then make a decision. Mm-hmm.
The company spokesman I've read saying that they believe it's safe. This is nothing but this is a series of delaying tactics from groups who never want to see any of this go forward. Is that a fair characterization?
No, not really. First of all, it's not safe. If you look at Dr. Johnson's testimony, there's no way that you could characterize this process as safe. The problem is we're trying to shoehorn a new technology, a new extractive process into existing regulations that just aren't equipped to deal with this type of industry. It's a new industry. It's a new process. It's experimental. And we're trying to use old regulations to evaluate whether this is safe or not. The state needs to take a step back, and they need to take a conservative look at these type of proposals, and they need to do the proper testing before they approve it, and they haven't done it so far.
By the way, you're welcome to join this conversation if you'd like with your question or comment. We would love that at 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495. We talked with a proponent of the project, Uinta County Commissioner Mike McKee, in the first part of the program. Now we're talking with opponents of the project, John Weisheit of Living Rivers and Rob Dubuque of Western Resource Advocates. And we'd love to have your opinion at 1-800-826-1495 or at our website, upr.org. There's a link to get an email through to us. upr.org. John Weisheit, one concern that your group has raised is possible degradation of water quality. Proponents of the project, I think, would say that this project is 25 miles from Willow Creek, 38 miles from Green River. They're saying that this is safe.
Well, that's true. You know, it's an interesting landscape from the watershed perspective because depending on where you're standing in the area, you could be looking at the White River drainage, the Green River drainage, and the Colorado River drainage. And even though you're at the top of this unique watershed, there is groundwater around it. For example, PR Springs itself, which is only like a half mile from the site. And so from a watershed perspective, it doesn't really matter what the distance is. You know, gravity flow is going to take it to these rivers. And even though this is only a 213-acre site, their goal is to expand more. And by the way, that expansion won't be in Uinta County. It will be in Grand County. And so another thing that you need to realize, especially if you go up there, is the violent weather patterns that they have up there. It blows horrendously up there. And the thunderstorms that come because of the cliff faces, the condensation of water, you get these very huge storms. And those are the things that, and even though there's so much alluvial fill there, that water does move through that fill towards the rivers. And if you do a Desolation River trip, for example, you can see how where that groundwater emanates from the rock and enters the Green River. So there's definitely a connection with the river. There's no doubt about that.
Mm. But by the way, I have seen, at least in the press, no opposition from anyone in Uinta County. Is this a purely Grand County-based opposition to this project?
Well, of course, because we are a petroleum industry-based county. We're a tourist. We have the national parks. But we also, unfortunately, have the highest rate of state lands, and that's what they're targeting. They're targeting our state lands. These state lands came from land transfers as national monuments and national recreations were created by the federal government. So there's this huge swath of state land, and it's mostly in Grant County. And this is going to be devastating to Grant County because they're going to turn this into a strip mining field. It's going to be no different than it is in Alberta or in West Virginia with the coal fields. And this is not what the people of Grant County want. Mm.
And by the way, your characterization of the aftermath of this potential project is markedly different from Commissioner McKee's. He's thinking that this can be reclaimed and it'll be good.
Oh, no, there's no way, because you need to go to the site, folks, and see how little topsoil there is. It took generations for this vegetation cover to happen. It is not going to recover.
I want to talk a little bit about how this fits into overall energy needs of the United States. Proponents of this sort of project say that we need to have domestic sources of energy. They will tell you, and we heard from Commissioner McKee, that yes, we do need alternative sources of energy, but that petroleum will be a part of that mix for a long time to come. I wonder, do you see alternative energy, wind, you know, solar, thermal, the other, as being able to solve that problem, provide our needs in the near future? Can we get by without this petroleum extraction? And I'll go to either Rob Dubuque or John Weissett, whoever wants to handle that.
Go ahead, Rob.
Okay. Well, our position on this, and I say our position, that's West Resource Advocates, is that we need to focus more on renewable energy and move away from our dependence on petroleum-based products. I realize that's a long-term strategy that the United States has to take. We do recognize the problems of depending on foreign oil, but tar sands and oil shale are dirty fuels at best, and the destruction that's going to be required to develop these fuels, I would think would be unacceptable to the people of this country, because it's going to take lands that are precious, and it's basically going to have a 100% impact on those lands. As John noted, you have to strip mine this stuff. And even though you, quote, reclaim it, it's never going to be the same. It can't be the same, because it took thousands and thousands of years to get to the way it is now. So, yes, I recognize that we have a dependence on oil, and people would like to see these type of resources be developed. But our position is that we would prefer to see renewable resources rather than petroleum-based resources be developed.
I want to follow up with that. I think most people would want to see us get to renewable resources. And, of course, that is the future, because the petroleum is going to run out at some point. But in the near to mid-term, is that going to be enough? Renewables, are we going to be able to ramp that up fast enough?
Well, you know, this is a, you know, it has to be a societal decision in terms of dedicating the resources we need. As you probably know, big part of the problem we have with renewable resources is the ability to store the power and the ability to transmit the power. And in order to break through the technical barriers that were we're currently looking at, it's going to take some funds. And so we as a society are going to have to make a commitment to develop these type of resources and to fund what's needed to find those solutions.
John Weisheit, what is next in terms of your group's opposition to this project? I know the the next legal step will be this hearing in May, but I'm sure the company and proponents of the plan will keep pushing for this.
Well, sure. You know, the community here in Moab is organizing to fight this project. It's kind of happened as a result of publicity about this event, but also through genuine concern, kind of an osmosis that. So the people of Moab are currently organizing. They, for example, they've had some dinners and some events, and they've invited me to come and speak and talk about the problems. So there's a genuine an awakening and an arising here in Moab, and the people are getting, there's been letters to the editor, and so it's definitely a groundswell here in the county. And so if people out there are thinking that Moab is asleep and doesn't care, that's not entirely true at all. And in fact, they're working for stopping this project entirely.
Rob Dubuque, Western Resource Advocates, what is next after this hearing in May?
Hopefully the administrative law judge will look at the evidence that we're presenting and make a decision to require a proper analysis of this. Once that happens, then we're going to have to wait and see what the company provides and how the division analyzes that information. So we're hopeful. We think that the evidence that we're presenting is it's hard to refute. As I say, we're not asking for an outright disapproval of this project. We are asking for a proper analysis, and we've got to have that. So we just have to wait and let things play out.
We have reached the end of our program. We've been talking with John Weisheit of Living Rivers. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Tom.
And Rob Dubuque from Western Resource Advocates. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you.
Previously in the program, we talked with University of Utah Professor William Johnson on this subject and Uinta County Commissioner Mike McKee. And if you have further comments on this issue, you can go to our website, upr.org, and click on the link, the email link, and get comments through to us on this or any subject. By the way, tonight at 6:30, we'll have for you the governor's State of the State address. We'll have the Democratic response, and then we'll have some reaction to that tomorrow on Access Utah. Hope to have your comments as well. And we do have the state party chairman confirmed for tomorrow. We're going to hear excerpts from the State of the State speech and the Democratic response. And we'll have Thomas Wright from the Republican Party and Jim DeBacchus from the Democratic Party. They'll be on with us. And we hope that they'll get you riled up and so that that you'll call in and email your comments on the legislature and the comments from the governor and the Democrats. That'll be tomorrow on Access Utah. Thanks for listening today.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1, 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1, 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1, 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1, 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1, 91.5 Logan.